behind the screen. There's a world of pure imagination behind the screen.
Remember how great that was?
Yeah, there's like five endings to Clue. They're making a TV show out of
that. Was the thing, was like, it was all, you remember the hype where it was like, you don't know which ending you're going to get.
Yeah, the difference in Clue was that depending on which theater you saw it and you saw a different ending.
Oh.
But what they didn't let you know is that for sure the first part of the movie was always going to be the same.
And terrible.
Yeah, just not going to be that great.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the Paul Goebel Show. I'm your host, Paul Goebel. Oh, man, we got all kinds of crap to talk about today.
Oh, don't we?
No, yeah, we do, I said.
Oh, we do.
Yeah.
Okay.
So much crap to talk about. And I don't know why. It seems to me Hollywood always shuts down around the holidays. You guys notice that?
Yeah.
Just push it open, bro. Come on in. We've got all our guests coming at eventual times.
I just saw this guy do stand-up last week.
Oh, yeah?
Funny. Hilarious.
How was it?
Hilarious. I just said that.
All right. You're just saying that because he's here?
No, he was
just
because
he's
funny.
In the room.
He told jokes. And...
All right. Well,
I don't remember that, right? You told jokes?
I did tell some jokes.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
Right?
Correct me if I'm wrong, but doesn't Hollywood like shut down around the holidays?
Yeah.
Some of us, it shuts down year-round.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But it's because of the Jews, right? All the Jews got all this Jewish stuff they got to do. Right, Jim? You're a Jew. And it's like, I don't have time for Hollywood anymore. I got to be Jewish. Because
I've got to make my turkey.
Right. Your turkey? That's my co-host and best friend, Jim Bruce, everybody.
Hey, everybody.
And along with Jim, of course, as always, is his co-host and best friend, Tom Griffin.
Hello.
Remind people who you are on Twitter again, Tom.
I'm that Tom Griffin.
That Tom Griffin is someone you should follow.
Not any of those other Tom Griffins.
Only me. Only that Tom Griffin. And we have two guests today for a special reason. Our first is our return guest. This is his fourth appearance on the show. You remember him from MST3K and his many appearances on, CNBC?
MSNBC.
MSNBC with Keith Olbermann. That's right. It's Friendly Frank Conniff. How are you, Frank?
Hey, hi. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on this rainy.
You keeping busy? What's your deal on Twitter? Who are you?
I am Frank Conniff.
That's pretty easy to remember.
Frank Conniff, I think, is how it goes.
And last time you were here, we talked about how like you always used to tweet on your way home, I'm listening to Mel Torme.
Yeah, that was when I first got on Twitter.
That was the only thing you had to say.
And then I realized, hey, if you know how to write jokes, this is kind of a good... with stuff. You know, with technology, it took me like a few months. I said, hey, I can write jokes, and this is kind of a good vehicle for that.
You
so
put
since
those jokes
then,
on
I'm
there.
Like almost exclusively devoted to just writing
and
jokes
didn't,
on Twitter.
A couple times, like I remember one time you were tweeting on the way home and a cop pulled you over.
Right, what happened there?
He pulled me over and for listening to Miles Davis while in a left lane.
But didn't he give you a warning also?
He did. He let me off with a warning. He said, "Don't see Jack and Jill."
every time. Nice. Okay. But then
I got that out early.
Yeah,
that's good.
I haven't done that joke in a while, so
get it out of the way. It's evergreen, that joke. You know, you always use a different.
It's always
movie.
A new joke. It's always
that's
a new,
right.
And I tell audience so like when I do cinematic Titanic shows, and I know that the late show audience is almost the same as the early show audience, and I say, hey, that's a different joke. I said a whole different movie that time. Give me some credit.
Nice. But nowadays, you tweet a lot of political stuff,
yes.
Like what's going on with Occupy Wall Street and stuff like that, so that's always nice to see. You know what I was noticing? When you talk about writing jokes and you put it on Twitter, the good thing is it's like the old days when you used to have to mail stuff to yourself to prove that you owned it or wrote it. Remember that?
Right. Oh, yeah, with
now,
the Writers Guild. Yeah,
yeah now when you tweet it, there, it's proof right there on the internet. I did it first. And, you know, like, I guess Bill Maher got in a big brouhaha about
right.
that. And he said the Onion stole his joke. And they went back and said, no, they see, we did it first before you.
I also think that Twitter, in some ways, is a modern day. The precedent of Twitter, what came before it in a way, was the 1920s. The Algonquin Roundtable.
Right.
George S. Kaufman, Dorothy Parker, Robert Benchley, all because... That was a time when people read jokes, like they would read what a person said at the Algonquin. They would read it in Franklin P. Adams' column the next day, And that was kind of how people got a lot of read a lot of people were reading jokes back then, and now we're like kind of back to an era where people actually read jokes.
Yeah.
Yes, but the great thing is you can pick and choose who you want to read jokes from.
Right.
You can follow Yakov Smirnov.
If my observation is that because of Twitter, I don't.
In Russia, Yakov Smirnov follows you.
Had to get that out right.
Yeah, my observation is thanks to Twitter, now I don't have to subscribe to Reader's Digest and read Life in these United States.
Right, they're just as short and it's just as funny.
You,
all right.
You follow a bunch of like soldiers just to get your humor.
I follow babies because I stopped getting kids say the darndest thing. I stopped watching old reruns of that. So I just follow a bunch of little babies.
They're probably going to do kids tweet the darndest things.
That would be great. I can't wait. That voice, of course, was our other guest who making a return appearance to this this show, Mr. Andy T. Wood.
Hello.
Is that your professional name, Andy T. Wood?
I'm thinking I probably should use that just because there's a bunch of Andy Woods. There was Andrew Wood from Mother Love Bone, the lead singer of the band that came before Pearl Jam.
That's a real band?
Yeah, they were the precursor. He died. He overdosed.
Oh, okay.
In 1990, then two of the guys formed Pearl Jam.
I got it. So, yeah, Andy T. Wood.
Yeah, and he was the guy that the Temple of the Dog was formed.
Tribute. That was a tribute to Andy Wood.
I was telling you about that.
Oh, okay.
Interesting. All right. And the T stands for the?
The Wood. Yes.
Andy the Wood.
Because what was your great idea? Because somebody will appreciate it.
Yeah, my idea was I wanted to start a Temple of the Dog cover band.
And they do, but they do covers of what?
Well, we would just cover Temple of the Dog.
A cover of a tribute band.
Yeah.
And who are they a tribute to? The Temple of the
Dog. Andy Wood.
Temple of the Dog was a band that was formed from like Pearl Jam and
anything,
Soundgarden members.
Anything
as like a one-off
Shaw
project.
Orchestra.
I always wanted to do a cover band of like made up bands on TV that aren't real, like The Way Out.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great idea.
Guys
like
the
Archies.
The Archies. Sure. What'd you say?
The Honeybees.
The Honeybees or whatever the...
Did Zach Morris form a band and Saved by the Bell?
Zach Attack.
Zach Attack.
Sure. Zach Attack cover band, but you're kind of limited in
that. Seems like the kind of show where they must have formed a band like once a season.
Yes. The other thing I wanted to do is, because I had this idea, I heard about an all-girl AC/DC cover band, and I heard them on the radio. They were on Howard Stern or something, and I heard them, and I was like, they're pretty good, and this is kind of a neat hook. All these hot chicks, and I was like, I'm going to form an all-male Go-Go's cover band.
There okay. There
but then I found out there were a bunch of them already. And I was like,
yeah,
fuck
one called We Got the Meat.
Nice. Yeah. I was going to call them, what was I going to call them, Jim?
The Stop Stops.
Exactly, the Stop Stops.
I still want to start an all-male.
Or the Go-Go Boys. That was another.
An all-male Bangles band, which is the Mangles.
The Mangles. I like that. But see, the sad thing is you got to then play that shitty music.
The Bengals are shitty?
Oh, what are you kidding me? Bad.
Early Bengals is really good before they became
early?
Popular.
What is what?
Yeah, like Hero Takes a Fall. Like the first couple hours you're talking about.
If puts out one album, it's hard to make the crazy early stuff.
The Bengals,
like two
they had earlier stuff.
Oh, okay.
All right, well, Andy...
I like the Bengals' early funny stuff.
The last time Andy was on the show, we were on location.
In my basement.
In Andy's basement in Portland, Oregon. But since then, you have relocated.
I live down in L.A. now, yeah.
How long you been out here?
Since January.
Hey, what we'll do is Aunt Paul and I will go on a tour in L.A. You put us up.
We'll come and stay with you. And now, do you...
Also in the Valley, actually. I'm just about 2 miles away.
Really?
Yeah.
And why? So why were you late?
That's a good question. I'm sorry.
but you're out here and you run a show... What tell people about the show you do, the
There's
Palace?
A show every other Thursday at the Palace on Hillhurst and Los Feliz. I do that with a bunch of other guys, including Ed Salazar and Sean Perlman.
It's a funny and a fun show.
It's very fun.
I suggest people go check it out and be on it. When I was on it, there was a lot of people in town from New York who were on it, which I liked because I didn't know them and had never seen them, and they were all hilarious. It was a fun show.
What's the name of the show?
It's just called The Comedy Palace.
Okay.
So if you look at, I think we're on Twitter at comedy_palace.
Yeah, but it's the restaurant's called The Palace, right?
Yeah, so the Chinese restaurant at 2112 Hillhurst.
And again, on Twitter, you are what on Twitter?
Andy T. Wood.
Andy T. Wood on Twitter. All right, let's get right to our topics. I got a whole list of bullshit to talk about. Now, I guess I didn't send you any of these topics, Andy, so you can, chime in. just chill out, get a drink. No, the first thing I want to talk about, they announced Rob Schneider is getting a sitcom on TV. And it's called Rob with an exclamation point. And the last show I remember that was like that, had an exclamation point, was Cleghorn.
Oh, wow, Ellen, that is really cutting obscure.
Right? Ellen Cleghorn's sitcom on the WB.
I worked with someone on Sabrina the Teenage Witch who wrote an episode of that show, I believe.
Really?
Yes.
Because our old friend, Sherry Shepherd, was a regular on that show, and I remember when it came out, she was reviewed as, like, the most racist character ever on any show. Because she was, like, just, like, a retarded young black woman. And she didn't work a long time for after that, and now she's on TV every day.
She's doing okay.
She's doing all right now. But Rob Schneider hasn't worked on TV since Men Behaving Badly. Which I wouldn't call it a success. It got like 1.5 seasons.
Yeah, it wasn't a success. It was one of those Thursday night NBC
shows
that, like, there were millions of them that just had the best time slots in television and completely tanked.
And nobody was interested. And I remember Ron Eldard was his co-star in the first one, the first time.
And Justine Bateman, right? Wasn't she?
That's right, and Justine Bateman. And then they replaced him with Ken Marino, who I am very fond of, but just nobody liked it. No one wanted to tune in.
Was that an attempt at wasn't it a British show?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, again, it's one of the many British shows that they tried to turn into an American show, and it failed. And that's always that's going to be a 50-50 proposition. Half the time it works, half the time it's terrible. But I don't think Americans care if it's, cause like you look at The Office, people in America were crazy about the English Office,
right?
But they took to the American one just as well.
No, not at all. I don't watch I love the British one so much. And I realize that that there's a lot of talent involved with The Office and that I'm sure that it's quite good, but I love I'm like really just kind of stuck up about it. I love the British. The British one was the first comedy show I got passionate about in like decades, you know. I didn't really have an interest in seeing a very good version of it because the British one was just sublime genius.
Right, it was the best you could do.
Yeah.
See, for me, when I watched The English Office, it just didn't click with me. Mm-hmm. I didn't really get it. It was just more like, I don't understand why this office exists. This guy's clearly a douche. These people are bad at their jobs. It didn't make sense to me. I didn't really enjoy it. Then I watched the American one, which made more sense to me. So then I went back to watch the English one. Mm-hmm. And I had now a relationship with these characters.
And I remember the second time you watched the English one, we were watching it together, and you were like, they should make one for American TV. I had the hardest time explaining this to him.
But I thought it was really, after I watched it, I thought, well, I get it now. I understand why this is so funny because it's so sad. Whereas, like, Steve Carell's character was, you know, kind of funny and whatever. Ricky Gervais, just pathetic.
Right, but with a lot of, in the writing of the character, a lot of, on the part of the writers, a lot of compassion for that character.
Yes.
You know? And that's what kind of made it very multifaceted and really great.
And, of course, that's because they were writing to an end. You can't sustain that. That's not a sustainable
model. Because there are moments on the British Office that are so painful, and he's such a jerk, and yet I find myself, like, really feeling for him, you know, because it's so human and it's so real.
One of my favorite things is with the comic relief episode. Mm-hmm. You know, when he does a crazy dance and all. But my favorite scene in that is when, at the end, when he goes out to take his picture with the big check, he's wearing that asshole costume.
The bird costume.
Yes, that asshole bird costume. And it's even a shitty version of that. It's a shitty version of the bird costume. And I'm like, you couldn't even spring to get the good version of that? It's almost like, well, the effort should be funny enough.
Right.
The effort should be enough to get a laugh. And that's like, no, that's not how things work. But as opposed to other shows that, you know, like Free Agents just premiered, nobody liked it apparently in America, and they canceled that.
I did.
Except for Tom. And we'll get to that, how things you like are canceled. This Rob show, I don't know what it's anything about it other than Rob Schneider is the star. And my question is, who was saying we need to get Rob Schneider back on TV?
Well,
who was watching?
I bet Rob Schneider was.
Okay, but was he referring to himself in the third person?
Yeah.
He was saying it under his breath. We need to get Rob Schneider back on TV. Oh, who said that?
For a while now, Rob Schneider's career has been an act of great friendship on the part of Adam
Sandler. Absolutely.
You know, who's just put him in a lot of stuff. And
sure.
Where he can say,
you can do it.
And, you know, but now I guess he's... And Happy Madison, isn't? Are they involved with this show?
I wouldn't be surprised, because they produce Spade's show, Rules of Engagement.
Oh, do they really?
Yeah. So, you know, it's basically, you know, and now Nick's... And they produce Pretend Time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and all the things his buddies do. And I'm all for that. I say, by all means, give your buddies jobs and don't waste time with other actors' times,
right,
you know,
right.
Bringing them to an audition for a role they'll never get. And, you know, and in some movies, I think, you know, Rob Schneider's very funny in The Waterboy. You can do it. That's a iconic thing now.
Whenever Rob Schneider comes up, I always have to point out that I middled for him in Minneapolis, like, 20 years ago, like, or even longer than that, like 1988, before he was on Letterman, before he had any big TV credits, when he was just a headliner from San Francisco, and he was a hilarious stand-up comedian.
I remember seeing him on Letterman before he was on SNL.
He was great. He was really funny and a really nice guy. So his career, like his movies, haven't been very good, but I've always been a little wistful about it because I just love working with him, and he was so funny back then.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
Well, yeah. That's why I'm curious about the show. Will it be funny? I mean, if it's his show, will it, you know, reflect his sense of humor? Will it remind us of the funny guy he used to be? Mm-hmm. Or will it be just more horseshit? Will he be a divorced dad with two daughters?
It's him and an ethnic family is what I understand about the premise of the show, which is apparently based on his life. He's married, and I might be getting this wrong, to a Spanish woman or something, and in the show it's him married to
and her in-laws
living with them. So, you know, what worries about me that to me evokes like bad Norman Lear things from the, you know, like AKA Pablo or something like that. You know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if it's all that, see, that's the problem is when Rob Lowe. They cast Rob Lowe as the straight guy, Rob Schneider as the straight guy in that situation and have him going, what is wrong with you people? While they're being crazy around him when he should be the crazy one. When they should say, what is wrong with you, Rob Schneider?
But this probably answers your question of why he has a show now, because the premise is supposedly based on his life. So he sold the premise.
Yeah, okay. That makes sense. What do you guys think of it? Who is excited to see it succeed? Anyone?
I never want anything to succeed because I'm a bitter and hateful man.
Like anything except things that you're involved in. All right, fair enough.
It's hard for me because of the kind words you just said, I'm sort of inclined to give it a shot as far as like not automatically thinking, this is going to suck. Because in general, when I hear his name, I think, oh, man.
Right.
Ugh, boy, this is going to be rough.
But, I mean, look at back. You know, I try to think of the things he's done in recent memory, and it's all a small part in an Adam Sandler movie. And in some of them, he was kind of funny. What was the one with the second one with Drew Barrymore?
Oh, the Many Dates one?
Yeah. That's what it's called. 50 First Dates. He was kind of funny in that.
Yeah.
And cute.
And that's a nice little movie, too.
Right, exactly. And he's not horrible. And, yeah, and it's like Frank said, if he can get back to the comic he once was.
Mm-hmm. But I think he's kind of better in small doses. He's such a character actor.
That's a good
point.
Yeah.
Yes.
He doesn't have the like emotional, you know, you want to be connected to the lead in a show like that. And I don't know if he can really draw people in.
Well,
funny, but you know, in a sketch way and in a,
yeah. Hopefully they'll cast it to where everything doesn't ride on him.
Right, right.
Which is a huge mistake, like in for this fucking the new and improved Home Improvement. There's nobody funny on that show but Tim Allen, and he's just barely funny.
You've watched a lot of that?
I've watched the first two episodes, and it's fucking horrible.
Really?
I can't stand it. But, I mean, even on the old Home Improvement, those kids were kind of funny. His wife, Patricia Richardson, was funny. On this new version, it's terrible. It's horrible. All right, let's talk about the other big news in TV is the big shakeup over at NBC. In case you haven't heard, NBC is taking Whitney and Community off the Thursday night schedule and replacing them with bringing back 30 Rock and
Up All Night.
And moving Up All Night to Thursday. And they're also taking Prime Suspect off the schedule completely and replacing it with the new The Firm show. And then Whitney is moving to Tuesday, where Up All Night was, and they're pairing it up with the new Chelsea Handler show. which means Prime Suspect, which has not only been taken off schedule, but has stopped production. It has been all but canceled. Community is going to finish its season, but it is off the schedule, and so it's in danger of being canceled.
Yeah.
That's the new situation. Now that, I mean, I assume we're all fans of Community in here, Frank?
Best, yeah. I've seen it only a couple of times, but I thought it was good.
Okay, yeah. And Andy, you love it, right?
One of my favorites on TV right now.
And I find, now we love, obviously we all love comedy, but I find that the young kids today, like your generation, Andy, they really, really love it. But also, aren't you friends with Eric Nielsen?
Not close friends. I mean, I know him, but
okay. But also that, like, I remember being in the clubs and hanging out with Ken Jeong, and he's such a super nice guy and funny. And to see him on TV, I think, oh, that's awesome, and he's hilarious on it. And then guys like Jim Rash, watching them on TV. But also overall, it's just super super funny.
Yeah.
Why is it that most of America doesn't like the show?
I don't get it.
Aren't watching it.
Well, I read...
You could say that about NBC, that entire Thursday night.
I was just about to say exactly that. It's
that they've
most of the NBC's... it's hard to figure out what NBC, when they decide between what they will consider a flop and what they will make a fake hit. And under the category of fake hit, I would put 30 Rock. I would put The
Whitney.
Office. Well, no, Whitney, I think, is more like in the flop category. I don't know if... But there
they're still pretending that it's a huge hit.
There are shows like, and you know, and I'm not putting down 30 Rock or The Office. You know, those are a lot of people love those shows. But you know, back in the 90s, NBC Thursday night shows were in the top 10 routinely.
Right.
Even the ones that they ended up canceling were in the top 10.
Right.
Now The Office and 30 Rock have never been above 70 or something like that. They're always like down in the low 50. I don't know what their exact numbers, but it's never even close to the top 20 or top 30 even.
Yeah, the whole
and
network,
yet,
obviously.
You know, NBC, and I think because NBC's production company produces those shows, they figured out a way that it's better to keep them on the air. They can get enough episodes, put them into syndication, and then NBC makes a lot of money for them.
Sure.
Even though they're not. So, I mean, the whole business structure is just completely different from the way it used to be.
Well,
but I think other factors go into the network's decisions of why they keep stuff on the air besides how well they're doing in the ratings. And in the case of like 30 Rock and The Office, the critical acclaim helps those shows too, I think.
Right,
because
yeah.
I think that helps the advertising rates and stuff like that.
And NBC is so depressed now that they need whatever they can whatever they can get to prop up to say, look, we've got something good on our network.
But I think that they're terrible at letting people know why they should want to watch a show. They're just very terrible.
Yes,
at their own
marketing. It's almost like they listen to what the public says and then goes, yeah, did you hear? Everybody loves The Office. In fact, isn't that an ad? You hear what people are saying about The Office?
Yeah.
They love it.
Because I think probably like I like Scott Yarbrough, who's been on this show. I tried to get to watch Community, and it just seemed to me like he didn't understand what the hell the show was about. And honestly, that's NBC's fault. So and he's talking to a dumb guy, so it took me a while to get through to him, but I was like, this is why the show's great, and he finally Hulu'd some of it, and then now he's on board, which is great. And I think more people would watch it if NBC first, of course, wasn't in the shitter. I think that's technically where they are. And
technically,
then also, if they just knew how to let people know why the show is funny. But that's a difficult thing to do regardless, to explain why
something's
funny.
You know what's ironic is that one of the episodes of Prime Suspect that they're not going to air was one of the mysteries they were trying to solve was why Whitney got on the air.
it took you a while to get there.
So they're calling Whitney a hit, and they're moving it.
They can't be calling it a hit. Come on.
Well, I think by NBC standards,
they're trying. They're hoping if they say it enough times, it'll come true.
Yeah, by NBC, like you said, they own that show, and so for them, it's a cheap and it's a hit. And I'm sure it's very cheap to produce. Nobody on the show has a big paycheck,
right?
You know, least of all her, as opposed to 30 Rock. And I don't know if you guys watch Comedy Central lately, but they had the 30 Rock promos are endless. Because they're showing 30 Rock reruns on Comedy Central now. So right there, that's where all the money's coming from. But yeah, I think they can see the writing on the wall for Community. Unlike The Office, where TBS was all over it, they don't see any interest in Community being syndicated anywhere. And I think they see, like, I don't know if this is a long-term
I think Unity is probably going to end up being like Police Squad. Many years from now, people are going to go, man, that shit was so great. And I'll want to punch you because I'm like, hey, you know what? If you'd have fucking watched it when it was on.
See, I think it's going to end up like Police Academy. They're going to add a black guy who does voices, sounds with his voice.
I'm fine with that. That's great.
Yeah? You're on board
with
that?
There's not enough sound effects comedians on TV.
It's true. And Leslie Easterbrook, they're going to put her on.
See, I don't think part of the problem with Community is that it might be too smart in a way.
Well, I think it's definitely... It's the kind of show that a certain amount of people are going to be very passionate about, and that other people are never going to get into. It's definitely a cult show, but cult doesn't necessarily have to mean a really small cult.
Yeah,
I think there's
Arrested Development. Can
I think
still
there's
be
a big
a cult show.
Yeah. I think there's a exactly
because
I think
it got taken off the air.
Right. Yeah, that's the only reason it's stayed
a
cult.
There's been a couple examples, and like now, Netflix is going to do new Arrested Development episodes, and. You know, there's been a couple examples lately, and the most prominent being Family Guy, where the network takes it off the air. They don't think it's doing well, and but people love it. In Family Guy's case, who knows why, but people love it. and
Futurama
and then
the same way.
It becomes a gigantic, and then they bring it back, you know, on DVDs or whatever.
I mean,
and
luckily
then,
those
and
shows.
And then they bring it back, and it's a gigantic moneymaker, but the executives at Fox were completely wrong about how successful.
But they have an advantage with those shows because they're animated and the cast can come back and do that at any time. Whereas Community, these actors are not going to wait around for, you know, a groundswell of fan support to say, bring Community back on the air on TBS. You know, some of them are going to, and some of them, like Ken Jeong is going to say, fuck this, I got a million movie scripts people want me to appear in, and he's going to go do it. You know, I heard Jim Rash just wrote that movie, The Descendants, that George Clooney movie.
Apparently, yeah.
Fuck, that guy's an amazing talent. He's hilarious. And then he wrote that George Clooney movie. I couldn't write a George Clooney movie.
He's the principal of Community, right?
You could write if it was Batman Forever.
I don't think
the situation's hopeless for Community because NBC is so depressed.
If NBC had hit shows, none of those shows would be on anymore.
Right, yeah,
Rock or The Office or any of them.
So there's a chance that
they wouldn't be making deals with Whitney and Chelsea Handler.
Yeah. If Whitney and Chelsea Handler's new show don't take off, there's a chance that going into next season, they'll choose continuity. They'll choose to bring Community back just because they don't have anything else.
Right, and they have those they're still in production. They'll have episodes ready to go.
And that's a good sign that they're still producing episodes.
Yes, that's a very good sign. Now, Andy, you have an inside scoop on Chelsea Handler. You want to tell people what that is, or you want me to tell them?
Somewhat. My girlfriend works there as a writer's assistant. April Richardson works in the show, and she's been on the round table a couple times.
On Chelsea Lately,
yeah.
Okay, so now I'll go on record saying I've never found Chelsea Handler funny. And I'm not a fan of her show, but
we're
does.
Happy that April has a job.
Of course.
We're very happy.
Of course. I mean, I don't begrudge anybody having a job, especially when it comes to doing something you love. But this new show, which is, I guess, I know just based on her life, like her book and all this other shit, I guess NBC liked it enough because she's not the star of it.
It's
am I right?
Peapon, right? Prepping.
Yeah, that's right. It's Donna. Yeah. Donna Pinciotti
is playing
a version of Chelsea. And she's not on it, I guess, playing because they wanted someone a little younger. Although, aren't they close? Aren't they pretty close in age at this point?
I don't know.
Supposedly, Chelsea's 36.
Yeah, she
and April
is. So
swears,
am I.
April swears she's seen her driver's license or has some reason to believe it. she swears she's 36. I don't buy it.
Maybe the mask she wears is 36. But what's aside from the fact that it's the Chelsea Handler sitcom, I don't know anything about it. Have you heard anything? And when you guys go to bed and she whispers in your ear,
all that I heard was they were trying to cast some people who maybe were unknowns for some of the parts. Like I got to send in info to read for this bartender thing. I didn't even get an audition for it. But, some other comic friends of mine I know went out for that. So
that's good.
That's kind of cool. They're bringing in some unknowns for some of the parts.
That's
I don't
always
know much
a plus.
About it beyond that at all though. So.
It'll be like, I don't know, it reminds me of Jesse. Remember Christina Applegate? Yeah, Jesse Camp. Christina Applegate sitcom, Jesse. She was the big star, and they kind of surrounded her with unknowns who were very funny. And then they put George Gisonda in as her dad. I bet that's what they do. They got Laura Prepon, the well-known star, and a bunch of unknowns, and then they put in one old person like just like they did on Whitney. They put in Jane Kaczmarek as her mom.
Oh, that's right.
But then she's like hardly on the show.
And then Chelsea is on it every now and then, right? Like,
kind is of she going to be? I don't know. If
yeah, I think I saw a preview of it, and Chelsea has like a recurring part on it. You know, it should be her show probably, but since she's doing her other show, she doesn't have.
She's time. Too. She makes too much money doing live appearances and shit to be on some sitcom.
I could see that one being funnier than Whitney's show. I do like Laura Prepon. Do you say Prepon?
I don't know. I just like say her. The hot chick from that '70s show. Yeah, I'm a big fan of hers.
She's definitely more likable than Whitney, I think.
Yes, well, and we've talked about Whitney ad nauseum on this show about how just nobody else on the show is funny, including her. Like, I like Chris D'Elia, but no one on the show says anything funny.
It's just weird how they shoved this person down everyone's throats as being a leading lady. Like, it was. I don't actively dislike her. I just
think she's very nice.
Everyone says she's nice, and I saw her on Letterman because I saw her on Fallon. I wasn't too impressed, but I saw her on Letterman. I thought, wow, charming. She charmed him.
But from the episode of a show that I watched, like, it's not even just that whether she's good or not. There was no storytelling in the episode.
Right, there's nothing going on.
So it's just
the whole show is an empty suit.
Me, how they put those shows on the air, and then they don't even really know what the show is. You know, like I couldn't figure out what really is the foundation. Exactly. Or the premise of that show, you know, the plot lines that I saw were so thin. It was like, you know, he disagrees with her, like he says he's romantic and she says, no, I'm more romantic. And then they tried and then they build a whole episode of like stuff that would have been like B or C stories on other episodes. Yeah, yeah. They build the whole show on.
Well, and also you might notice I've been watching Parks and Rec. I've been reviewing Parks and Rec. For TVGeekArmy.com, and it amazes me how hilarious that show is every week. And I can't get over the fact that there are three strong storylines in every episode. In a 20-minute sitcom, there are three distinct, hilarious storylines that involve all the characters. And I care about all three of them. They all three make me laugh. They all three are... I watch it and I think Andy Goes to College, that's a whole nother fucking sitcom.
Right.
That's a whole nother show. And hey, that's kind of weird, isn't it, that they're named Andy and April?
Yeah.
I haven't watched much of it, but
I watched one episode just because Emily Maya Mills was going to be on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I tuned in and I was very taken by the show, which I hadn't really seen that much. And I would add to what you're saying about it is everyone on it is strong. You know, all the performers on it are really strong performers. And like, for instance, the guy who I guess I recognize from stuff, but who I'm not that familiar with is like the kind of big guy who works there.
Nick Offerman.
Yeah. That's a really hilarious character, you know, and a really funny performer.
Mm-hmm.
And seems like is the thing they forget in sitcoms is you got to get really great performers and you got to give them stuff to play.
Well, that's when I went to the Paley Festival and they were talking about casting Louis C.K. as Leslie's boyfriend that one year. They were talking about who can we get, you know, some guy who's good looking, whatever. Mm-hmm. And Amy Poehler said, let's just get the funniest person we can think of. And they were like, huh?
And they never think of and
they got Louis C.K.
From my limited experience working on network sitcoms, they never think that way. They
but
always
that's,
think, like, who's good look? Who's the hot performer right now that everybody wants, you know?
And that's clearly, like, this show, they went and got the funniest people. I mean, you know, when the show first started, I wasn't a big fan of Aubrey Plaza because of her character or whatever. And they've completely turned that around. Now she's one of my favorite people on the show.
Have you heard the producer talk about, like, when they hired her? Like, the casting agent called him up and said, I just met the weirdest girl. You've got to meet with her. And he said, and she came over to my office and made me uncomfortable for an hour, and I hired her.
Yeah, and she's really funny. And I've seen her on talk shows, and she's cute, and she's kind of like that character, April, but she's not a complete a-hole, like, on the show. But they're all so super funny.
Yeah,
and even Rob Lowe. Clearly they went, let's get a guy who's great-looking, but he has to be funny. And, you know, Rob Lowe is that guy.
Rob Lowe has comedy bona fides, you know?
Yes, well, that is Soul Man.
Mm-hmm. Wayne's World?
What? Yeah. Wayne's World. He is great
in
Wayne's World.
France.
And well, he's in
who else was in that movie he made
in France?
What
was the girl's name?
I don't remember her name.
I know there was this buddy who was like, his character was very encouraging.
That's right. I remember that guy. All right. Well, briefly, let's talk about how Prime Suspect. I'm a fan of Prime Suspect, but I'm not crazy about it. And I guess
I like it a lot.
Okay. So, I don't know. Is America not taking to Prime Suspect
clearly
the way they should?
Clearly
America's
not
taking to NPC.
I guess that is what you were saying. That's the bottom line, is they're not staying. So do we think the Firm TV show is a good idea? I think it's a horrible idea, personally. Because
I didn't think it was a good idea for a book or a movie.
See, I enjoyed the book to a certain extent, but man, the movie was bullshit.
Yeah.
I hated it.
How do you, I mean, it has such a distinct, it has to end for the story
yes.
to be. And even the book didn't. The book and the movie couldn't figure out how to end it well. But it has to have an ending, or else you're just constantly under the thumb of this company that owns your life. How is that a sustainable?
Yeah, thing? And what is he? Is it like I don't know, like Alias or something, where he's working with the FBI to try to catch them? Or
well,
I mean,
if
they're
it's
mob
a
lawyers.
Success, I hope it'll mean that I can pitch my idea, the Jacoby and Myers files.
You know what you call that? The infirm. Oh, fuck. How do I do it? All right. Well, let's talk
There was another show that went on hiatus.
What was
in,
that?
In the wake of, as if ABC was trolling Community fans, as people were freaking out about Community going on hiatus, ABC pulled Cougar Town from the schedule.
Oh, Tom, I feel bad for you.
It was a rough week.
Is there anything you're still watching? Is there anything on that you still enjoy?
Yeah, sadly, I watch all sorts of stuff.
Wow, so they pulled Cougar Town. I thought that was a huge hit. I thought everyone loved Cougar Town.
That was already like on the mid-season. Like,
yeah.
So it hasn't been on this season at all. And then they're like, nope, I guess not yet. So,
wow, that's insane.
So that
but
seems
it's not
like
canceled. It's just they're pulling it from
the
season.
It's not officially canceled, but they like put it to mid-season, and then now it's not on the mid-season schedule. So that looks this
and
is
like the super committee's
really
been
bad.
Moved to mid-season now.
That's a sitcom, the super committee. All right, let's move on to trivia for this episode. Last week, the trivia question was, I was talking about Anson Mount from Hell on Wheels, and I said the first show he was on was called The Mountain, which co-starred one of the worst actors on television. Who is that? These guys didn't know. Do you guys have any idea?
Say it again.
The show was called The Mountain on the WB. It starred Anson Mount, and his brother on the show was played by a guy who I consider to be one of the worst actors ever, but definitely one of the worst actors on TV.
Leslie West?
No.
Can we get a hint, like
Mountain.
Something else the person's been in?
Mountain, ladies.
Well, he's on a show. He's on a sitcom now, and he was on another sitcom on the WB, and he is the brother and son of a famous actress, of two different famous actresses, rather.
Oh, wow.
That should give it away.
Corky Lang.
And who is he the brother and son of?
No, he was the drummer in the band Mountain.
Wow.
Felix Popolari. Okay, now I finally made
what it. Was that? Mississippi Queen? Was
Mississippi
that their big
Queen,
hit?
Sure.
Oh, I know what song I'm going to end this one on. Oh, Mississippi Queen. It was, any guesses?
Brother and son of a, no.
Oliver Hudson. Brother of Kate Hudson, son of Goldie Hawn. And
a son of a Hudson brother.
Yeah,
I guess.
It's either Brett or Bill. I can never remember which
you
one.
You left out the most important part, that he's the son of a Hudson brother.
Really? That's the most important part? I know. I find it so funny when Kate Hudson talks about her parents. She always means she always means Goldie Hawn and Kurt Russell. She never mentions her birth
her
father.
Her birth father.
And you know, it's not like he's... I guess... It was such a bad divorce. Like, Goldie Hawn and Brett Hudson hate each other so much. It was really hard on the kids. But
I'm guessing she was very jealous of his career.
I think she cheated on him with both brothers, with both Mark and Will. But Oliver Hudson is the answer. A lot of people looked it up and wrote to me and said it was who it was. But Jason Rawlings was the first person who answered, and he got himself a porno parody in the mail. So congratulations to you, Jason Rawlings.
Questions on the web are a real honor system now, aren't they?
They
right?
totally are.
Yeah.
Yeah. I try to come up with questions that you can't really look up easily, but I definitely try to come up with questions that these guys can't get. The question this week you might be able to get, because as Frank mentioned, he was a writer on the Sabrina the Teenage Witch show. The question is about Sabrina. Who played Sabrina's father on Sabrina the Teenage Witch? Does anybody know?
Her father.
Do you know, Frank?
I don't remember.
Okay. I only remember it in the, because it was in the first episode, and I, of course, watched the first episode.
Was it in the first episode?
There's a, like, a painting on the wall, and her father is in it, or a photograph, or a portrait or something, and she talks to him.
Martin Short.
Nope, that's a decent guess, though. Tom, you got a guess?
John Astin.
That's a terrible guess.
Oh, I was thinking of Night Court, sorry.
Andy?
My guess is based on a similar absent father in a Supernatural sitcom called Out of This World. The
box. You can guess Burt Reynolds? Reynolds,
so
yeah, no, it wasn't Burt Reynolds, but that's a good guess. Frank?
I'm going to guess. Was it Robbie Benson?
It was Robbie Benson! Okay. Well done!
I only guessed it because he directed the pilot episode.
That's right.
He directed
many episodes.
And Robbie Benson also was in a movie that we did on Mystery Science Theater called City Limits, I think it was. And
is that where he was a Native American?
We were savage toward him. And then Joel was around the Sabrina set, too, at the time, and we met him, and he was such a nice guy, and he was, like, really cool about it. He thought,
he said he thought it was really funny.
What?
He was also the Beast.
Yes, he was
kind
the
of
Beast. In that, and you're talking about that Patrick Swayze show about drugs, right?
That's right.
Yeah, Robbie Benson, and he directed a lot of stuff. He directed a lot of Friends, and he still does. That's what he does. So congratulations, Frank. Here, I'll give you a sticker.
He's a good guy, Robbie Benson.
Here, you can get one of the new.
He also jumped
King
off the Tallahatchie Bridge, right?
Yeah.
I remember when he did that. All right, I want to remind people that we are on Stitcher. If you want to listen to the Paul Goble Show and other great podcasts on your mobile device, you can just download the Stitcher app and you can listen to them that way. You don't have to download the MP3. You don't have to download the file. You just listen to it through Stitcher and you stitch together all
your
favorite podcasts. What?
Right on your CV.
No, on your phone.
Oh, okay.
And you download, stitch together all your favorite podcasts, and you can listen to them through there, and it's really cool. And if you go to my website, thekingoftv.com, you click on that Stitcher link, and then you can enter a contest to win $1 million or some shit like that.
Remember when you click on the link, go, I got stitched, right? Or you can't win, right?
Yeah.
Yes. You
have to say the catchphrase.
You have to say, I got stitched. And make sure when you say it, you're spelling it STITCH'D.
You don't want anyone to think you got Elaine stretched.
How horrible would that be? The other thing I want to talk about.
I mean, she's sassy.
You're going to thekingoftv.com, you can always read my blog and read the Perspectives blog. And you can also buy hilarious bonus content videos there at thekingoftv.com. They are on sale for 99 cents each, or 5 for $4, or 10 for $7, right?
Yes.
How much is that a piece, Andy?
10 for $7 is,
Frank, you want to help him out?
70 cents each.
Oh, don't ask me. 70
cents each.
Yes, 70 cents each is exactly right. Well done. So that's what you can buy there. All right, let's talk about, and this is why I invited Andy on the show, because I was re-listening to the Mark Maron What the Fuck podcast with Gallagher on it the other day. And first of all, there's my favorite line in it. When Gallagher gets up to leave, because he leaves halfway through the interview, he ends it abruptly, walks out. But when he gets up to leave, Mark Maron goes, "Oh, come on, Gallagher." And he laughed so hard because I thought, how many times has anyone said, "Come on, Gallagher"? Like,
now,
why did he leave?
Was it
apparently, if you listen, even from the beginning of the interview, he clearly is not in a good mood. He's an angry man, and we'll get to that. But he just halfway through, he had enough. And also, I guess they were in a hotel room somewhere where they were both doing shows, so it wasn't like it was really hospitable or whatever. But I thought, does he lie in bed and his wife goes, "Hey, can you take out the garbage before we go to sleep?" And he's like, "I'll do it in the morning." And she goes, "Come on, Gallagher."
Come on, Gallagher. If he's going to do a sitcom.
Come on, Gallagher. And you know what the show is? It's about him and his brother, Gallagher 2. And he doesn't perform anymore, but his brother does. And he tells his brother, "Listen, you've got to pull out the Sledge-O-Matic earlier." And his brother goes, "Come on, Gallagher." And then the theme song starts. But I thought that was hilarious. But recently Gallagher was in town. Where was he, Andy?
He was in Ventura for the Ventura Comedy Festival.
And you went down there with April, and you guys saw him, and you live tweeted basically the concert. And I remember reading it, because I follow both you guys on Twitter, and I remember reading it and thinking, I might go, because I saw Gallagher when I was in high school. Yeah. And I saw in a succession of 3 days, I saw Weird Al, George Carlin, and Gallagher, all 3 nights in a row. And, of course,
2 out of 3 ain't bad.
Right? Because Weird Al, that was just a concert, and it was great, but it was basically a rock and roll concert. Carlin was brilliant. Probably the, I mean, not like I need to say this, but it was probably the best stand-up I've ever seen in my life.
Sure.
It was amazing.
My favorite part of the show would be when he'd talk about how words are weird, and then he'd smash them. Remember when he'd smash the words?
Paul Gilmartin, we were playing poker the other night, and Paul Gilmartin goes, "You guys ever hear my Gallagher impression?" And he goes, "I like to go to a beach and yell shark. Just messes with people's minds."
Didn't Gallagher always say, wasn't he like a common thing in Gallagher's act? Because that's my job, saying this stuff.
I got to tell you folks, yes.
Because that's my job.
Oh, yeah. So he came and he did the show, and I followed you guys, and basically it became you guys tweeting like, "Oh, my God, I can't believe this. This is crazy. He just did this. He just did that." And my first reaction was, is this what comedy has become in America? Now, Andy, you're not, I wouldn't say you're like deep into the hipster scene the way that people are. You don't like, you know, turn your nose up at comedy or whatever. And you're certainly one of the nicest people I've ever met in my life. Whoa. So, I don't want to paint you with that picture, but you are, I would say in terms of LA, I would say you're like a hipster comic because of the friends you have and the people you hang out with and whatever, only because you're hip. You're a hip young dude. What is your reaction to that?
My opinion of that, first of all, is moving down here has shown me even more that everybody, especially in comedy, is so self-critical, self-hating, that everyone thinks they're these cliques they're not part of. Like, I have so many comedy friends who are really successful, and they just feel like, oh, I can't do shows on the East Side, or I'm not in that. Like, no, you're funny. You would be embraced there because you're funny. Like, I think that crowds are more forgiving than a lot of comics give him credit for.
Yeah,
I think
that's true.
It's a bigger umbrella than people think it is. Like, I don't think I'm that much of a hipster. And I mean, I definitely, like, 10 years ago, liked a lot more of what was then called alternative comedy, but I think now that's just kind of mainstream comedy. That's just what's popular.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's true. Well, you were part of that. I mean, you were certainly part of the alternative comedy scene, Frank.
I was a part of that.
And now that, now,
and that's why I always snub all of you people. That's why I'm such a snotty asshole.
Yeah, that's true. I've noticed that. But now I know. But now it's like, I mean, it doesn't seem like that long ago, but now it's almost like you're revered. I mean, anyone who knows comedy, of course, MST3K is looked at, you know, you can't say a bad word about
it. Well, actually, MST3K, when I moved to LA in like 95, my association with the show was the reason, like, right away I did every alternative comedy room. It was like my entree into that world.
Of course.
And it was in L.A. when I first came out here. It was the only thing that MST3K opened doors for me. Because in, like, the places where I was trying to get work and television and all that, it's like people didn't really give a shit, you know?
Right,
it's,
even if they had heard of it.
It took me about a year to break into writing for television in L.A., which was a shock to me at the time. But the thing is, though, is, you know, that was a great scene back then, but I think the comedy is better now in L.A. than it was then overall. I think there's so many really hilarious people now in L.A., and so many people, like, really working hard on their acts and doing all kinds of different kind and just as weird or alternative as you know, as anything. Or some people just doing more kind of straightforward stuff, and there's so much of it that's really, really
good. There's certainly a wealth, an abundance of choices.
I would say that, you know, right now is a great time in terms of the quality and the quantity of the comics in L.A.
You know,
it's a great scene right now.
Well, go ahead, Andy.
I was going to say, and I think comics like Jimmy Pardo, who are, you know, big at UCB and those kind of places, if you just saw his act in a vacuum, you wouldn't walk away being like, oh, look at that hipster guy. I think he's too cool for the room.
Exactly.
No, he's just doing a good job of traditional performance.
That's why he still kills on the road.
But turn up their nose.
And there are more comics now in L.A. Who would do well on the road while still doing, you know, their kind of unique stuff.
When I first
came to L.A., there was much more of, like, people on stage with notebooks and it being very unstructured, like, like people just telling stories from their day and not really. There was a little bit of kind of a attitude against craft almost, you know, back then. Like, there was a lot of people who wouldn't do, you know, like didn't want to do the same thing every night, but you know, doing the same thing every night is how you develop things. And it's also like, you know, there has to be a second draft. There has to be a third draft, you know? So you have to like, the idea of a comic just coming up and doing something completely different every night. I mean, it's great in theory, but in practice, you know, you have to develop, like I said, there has to be a second draft, a third draft to polish, you know.
You have to make an act. Just
so
respect the audience.
I think there's much, and all of the comics now in LA are kind of like that. They're all like very dedicated. The good ones are very dedicated to the craft of it. And they're doing stuff that's really hip and unique to them. But it's stuff that you don't have to be like an LA industry insider to appreciate it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes. So these tweets, if you follow Andy and or April, it was basically just watching the show and reacting to it. And for the most part, it was, I would say yours were mostly informative. Mm-hmm. Andy, yours were mostly like, now he's doing this, now he's doing that. And it was like, make your own judgment about it. Like the French thing.
Right.
Like for some reason, he was up all about the French.
Really angry at how many words in our language come from French words or are French words. He kept coming back to that well, like
and it
three
was,
or four times.
And it seemed like you were just flabbergasted
I was
by
like,
it.
Was
you're
he
like,
molested by French words?
Right. Why
and
the fuck?
Soldiers wear fatigues and stab you with a bayonet. I'm like, first of all, they don't use bayonets anymore.
Not anymore, right?
We're like, well, you're so bothered that our military might have some words that come from French.
That's hilarious. But then April's tweets were, you know, like, I guess one of the things, maybe you tweeted, but she said she saw a poster and she said, I can't say oh my god enough. That was kind of her reaction to the entire night.
When he walked in, she said that because there's Bisqueen everywhere. It's a beautiful, majestic theater. There's 50 feet of black Bisqueen hanging on the backstage. The monitors are covered in black Bisqueen. So it looks like the theater was under construction.
Right.
And like Gallagher's just spray painted in big letters and the vowels are watermelons. It just looks like shoddy.
Horrible.
The whole thing looks shoddy when you walk in.
But I mean, you know, aside from the fact that, you know, obviously you're having a night, my thought was, is this what comedy has come to in L.A.? Is this what you got to do to show that you're a cool, funny comedy aficionado? Go see something you know you will hate and tweet about how shitty it is. And, you know, and we're friends, so I can have you on to talk about this. And like you said to me, that certainly wasn't your intention. What was your intention?
Well, I want to preface this by saying I grew up in the tail end of the comedy boom. I was about 13 when Comedy Central started. So I watched there were tons of stand-up shows back then. You know, I had like Half Hour Comedy Hour, A-List, stand-up.
And Gallagher himself, it's like 14 specials.
Yeah. So Gallagher
Showtime,
and Carrot Top, I loved them when I was, but I loved MST3K. I watched all those things at that age. And I wasn't, you know, picky over one being cooler than the other. I loved all those.
Right.
And so like, I've never seen Gallagher, and I have a special connection to it because also two friends of mine are managed by a guy who just recently started managing Gallagher for the last 2 years. So I'd hear all these stories, and my buddy Dax Jordan actually arranged that Gallagher interview with Mark Maron when they were both in Portland.
Oh,
fun. Like he put
that
together.
That's right, it was in Portland.
And, you know, thought he would be helping out Gallagher by getting this exposure.
And you got the tickets were free, right?
Well, I was going to the Ventura Festival anyway to see Dax and Murray Valeriano's friends of mine at the festival. And then last minute when we're up there, April's like, we can't not see Gallagher. And I was like, yeah, because, you know, I grew up watching, like, I genuinely liked him when I was that age.
Yeah, I can
see
that.
I knew I wouldn't
that.
Like it now, but I still, he's obviously a good performer, and I just wanted to see what he did these days.
I can totally
I was
see
trying
that.
To be fair, I wasn't going with the intention of tweeting, so I just tweeted beforehand. I'm like, should I live tweet this? It just occurred to me, and people were like, yes, yes, definitely. And so I was trying to be even-handed, and I would even quote some jokes I thought were funny. Like, he had a bit about, you know, driving around the country, comparing the price of hitting a construction worker, like the various signs that tell you how much it costs to.
Right.
And like, I'm not doing it justice, but like bits that I was like, oh, there's a funny, he had a joke about funerals being unnecessary if you believe in a spirit, because it's like you don't, if a bird flies away, you don't have a party for the cage or something. I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. Like he had some jokes that were smart. And
that's true Gallagher. That's what made Gallagher. I mean, one of my favorite Gallagher bits from the old days is when he'd talk about, he'd actually talk about how words are weird, but go more specific about it. He'd say like,
T-O-M-B, tomb.
Exactly.
C-O-M-B, comb.
W-O-M-B, womb. Yeah. And I would be like, wow, that's, to me as a kid, it showed me how arbitrary language is and just on a bigger scale, how arbitrary so many fucking things in the world are. And it honestly opened my mind up to like, that's a fucking crazy thing. And then his crazy inventions. I would watch my dad, and my dad thought those were the greatest things ever. He's like, he's a fucking genius. But I thought, that actually, I mean, yes, it's just a dumb invention to be funny, but it is kind of clever. And I would often think, anybody could do that. Anybody could fucking, you know, engineer something that is kind of a neat thing. And that's what half the fucking toys are at Disneyland these days. Someone said, let's put a balloon inside of another balloon and make the inside balloon glow.
Yeah.
All right, that sounds good to me. And now they fucking sell them for $20 a pop. Haha, pun intended. But I think there was a lot of people who were reading that probably and saying, haha, Gallagher sucks. Right. I can't wait to go see Carrot Top and do this, or I can't wait to see whatever and do this. Because if you go see Andy Kindler, as you know, brilliant as Andy Kindler is, a lot of his act is basically talking about how much other people suck. and in some cases, he takes on big targets, like Robin Williams. I saw him do this hilarious bit.
I just worked with Robin the other night.
I almost did. I came close. I went to the David Feldman show where Frank was, and he had already left.
Funny with Robin Williams, because he's a guy, you know, that a lot of us in comedy have been very critical
of
his stand-up. And I've met him twice, and, like, I don't know if it would affect my being negative about his stand-up now, because he's such a sweet person.
Yeah.
He's
and also
a genuinely nice.
And you look back at it, I mean, for me, you know, obviously growing up watching Mork and Mindy, that was a huge thing. Mm-hmm. And then just his other career. Yes,
and he's always been a good actor, too, I think.
Yes, and sure, he's made a lot of shitty movies, but he's made movies that are just as good as the other ones are shitty. And it goes back to that thing, you know, happened a million years ago at the UCB, where, you know, the guy was sitting with his arms folded in the front to Ron Williams. And that's, you know, that and I remember saying, that is a fucked up thing. If you don't enjoy the show, fine. But don't be actively a dick about not enjoying it. And more importantly, why are you even there?
Yeah. I was laughing during Gallagher. April was giving me looks at how much I was laughing, but some of the stuff was genuinely funny to me.
And so, yeah, I wonder if, like, I want to say the Andy Kindler bit is how he says there's this new thing for young comics in L.A. called Scared Funny. Like, if you're a young comic but you're not funny, you have to hang out with Robin Williams for a weekend while he does his gay choreographer character the whole time. And of course, Andy Kindler can get away with saying that, and it's hysterical. But then some of the shit he's, like, I remember once he talked about Star Trek convention. He's like, I don't understand. I you know, if you're a fan of the show, that's great. But, you know, if I go to a Mary Tyler Moore convention, I might go. But I don't dress up like Rhoda.
That was hilarious.
And that's a great joke, but it really makes no fucking sense.
Well,
when you think about
it.
Wait. So you're saying it makes sense that there might be a Mary Tyler Moore convention somewhere in the world.
Well, no, but that's a funny premise that I've actually done several. I've been invited as a guest at several kind of sci-fi. And I had an idea, and maybe you should maybe be the guy putting on this convention. I had an idea for a convention called the Everything But Sci-Fi Convention. In other words, all the shows that people love that aren't sci-fi
and
shows
movies?
And Mary Tyler, you know, because like at this, you know, at this thing I did a month ago, Dragon Con in Atlanta, you know, there were like Ernest Borgnine was there, but only because he was in, you know, whatever sci-fi thing he was in, like but he was in, you know, I'd love to talk to him about Bad Day at Black Rock and
Marty
and From
really
Here to Eternity
Marty.
And Marty and all these great, like,
work
the sci-fi stuff is like the, and like Christopher Lloyd was there too, who's done it, and all these people who did it, and that gave me the idea, you know, there should be fandom for stuff like that.
That's
too.
True.
You know,
they should have book conventions,
well,
not comic book conventions.
I mean, they have
some
hardcover book conventions.
Woodstock,
really?
In Portland.
Oh, okay.
They have,
of course, in Portland. They have that.
They have stuff like that, but I mean, that was my idea for convention, which will never happen because I'm certainly not going to put it on. But behind Andy's premise, though, just the idea, if you take it out of sci-fi, the idea that you would go to a Mary Tyler Moore convention dressed as a character, which is what people do for
other
shows.
But that's my problem. If there was a Mary Tyler Moore convention, you bet your ass I'm going dressed as Rhoda. I'm going dressed as fucking Lou Grant, Rhoda, fucking Lars. People ask me, who are you? I'm Lars Lindstrom. Oh, you never saw him on the show. Exactly. Right. That's what I, this is such a great costume. I'm fucking, yeah, Chuckles the Clown. How do you not
Chuckles
go to America?
Chuckles the Clown would be a really popular, I think.
Right? I bet there'd be like four or five of them all looking completely different.
I would go as the episode, I would go as Jerry Van Dyke from the episode he was on.
So that's what I'm saying, is that's why that joke doesn't make sense, because yes, that's why you dress up, and that's why these people dress up, and even though it's a funny joke, it's basically just saying,
Another thing I love from that Andy Kindler bit was, and I think this was just him relating a true thing, is he got up on stage and he said, yeah, it's, Star Trek is great, especially like, you know, when they were trapped on the island and then like Marianne and Gilly. and then Andy said, and the audience was like, no, you don't joke about that.
Yeah, I bet. But it gets, I mean, and some people can do that. Andy, you know, Andy Kindler has been making fun of things for a long time now.
That's his deal.
That's his deal, yes. But I get the feeling, and I see this too, that too many young comics, like Jim brought up the other night about the Whitney thing. Mm-hmm. You know, so many young comics are ready to get up and shit on Whitney because it's a bad show, when the truth is they would be more than happy to work on that show.
Well, can't you shit on the publicity blitz, at least? It's being shoved
right.
down the throat.
Right. Shit on, Don't shit on her. Don't shit on the show.
Either Jen Kirkman or Morgan Murphy, I forget, had a really funny tweet at the time, which was, I just wish NBC would get behind Whitney.
Yes. But that's, but you bring up another good point, because as bad as these shows are, like, I hate Two Broke Girls. I think it's horrible. And
The
other Whitney Cummings show. But as bad as these shows are, they're giving work to funny comedians.
Right.
You know, Morgan Murphy works on Two Broke Girls.
And Mark Eidlinger does.
And Chelsea Peretti works on something. I just saw her name.
She works on, I think, Parks and Recreation.
Oh, there you go. That's why that show's so funny. But especially female comics, you know, yeah, you want a funny show, hire a funny female comic.
Well, I think it's also, it's going to be ultimately good for some people that comedies like Two Broke Girls and The New Girl with, that they're doing well. You know, it's been a long, like, I don't know if it's, I think Fox might have screwed up New Girl because of the World Series maybe, but when New Girl premiered, everyone was saying this is an actually a breakout hit show, and there hasn't been a breakout hit comedy in ages, and that's a good thing, even if it's a show that you don't like, because now they're going to develop a lot of they're going to develop a lot of comedies for women now, which is a good thing too.
Yes. Speaking of, am I the only one who watched SNL last night?
It was really good.
I watched it.
I liked it a lot.
I watched the news.
I thought it was okay, but the thing I loved the most was the Regis skit. That Zooey Deschanel impression I thought was hilarious, and the George Lopez impression was brilliant.
The George Lopez impression was funny.
That all made me laugh. And I guess this mattress thing was good, too.
You didn't like both the fake ads, the mattress thing and Red Flag perfume, I thought were great.
Oh, but that Red Flag, that was an
old one. Is that old? Okay, yeah. I haven't seen that.
It's funny, but
I liked the chest thing.
You did?
Yeah, that was hysterical.
I thought it was okay. It just seemed to me it went on too long.
Oh, man.
How many of your jokes made it on?
Well, how many did I write?
You wrote five, right? Don't you write five every week?
Right, I write five every week. And they didn't use any of those ones.
Okay, did they use any that you didn't send in or didn't write?
Yeah, they used a lot of those.
Yeah, a lot of the ones that you didn't write. Because they do that with me every week.
Yeah.
I'm like, fuck, I didn't write that joke.
Me too.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm like, I didn't write any of that stuff. How the fuck do they do that?
I'm going to bite on this. Are you actually on the fax list? Or is that?
Yeah. Well, although I'm not, because there's it's not a fax list anymore. But yeah.
For all intents and purposes. Yeah.
He's on the submission list, yes.
Yeah.
For the second year in a row.
Yeah, they were kind enough to invite me back. And
so far.
So on this year?
No. Not yet.
No, but you know what? Here's the thing. This is what I do now. As long as the news is hysterical, I'm okay with it. And it was very funny this week. I thought there were some wonderful jokes.
I thought John Huntsman was great. Wasn't he really interesting?
I
thought that was, first of all, I thought that was a ballsy thing to do, to go on and have people go, who the fuck is this? You know, I'm sure that most of America...
Not ballsy for John Huntsman. He's got nothing to lose.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But he was really good and really funny, and he made fun of himself
I didn't see this particular sketch, but I find it a little annoying on SNL when they get the actual celebrities or they get the actual people to be on, because, you know, then that kind of becomes the joke and that kind of becomes the event. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I don't mind
it
when
there's so much
No, they should be making fun of them more and should be and making
another. And someone pointed out, I think David Feldman, who I work with every week, he said that the only truly subversive show ever in the history of network television was the Smothers Brothers show, because that was a show that they actually, even though it got good ratings, they actually took it off the air because it was too subversive. And Saturday Night Live has, you know, it's had its really funny moments and stuff, but it has a reputation of being subversive. It's never been subversive ever.
No, more. I mean, subversive in the way that a five-year-old is subversive.
Right, right.
That he just doesn't want to do what he's told. But yes, the Smothers Brothers, they were told specifically, do not do this on the show.
Right.
And then they fucking did it and said, we're going to continue to do it.
Right.
And there's only one way to stop us. So, yeah. That was the thing about, like, when they have big guests on, like, every 4 years they have Obama or whoever's running for president
right.
on.
And they had Sarah Palin at the height of...
Which I hated that.
Yeah.
And I remember when they started bringing Snooki on, what's his name, Moynihan, as Snooki. The first time they introduced it, I thought, oh, fuck, is this going to be the real Snooki? But it wasn't. And it made me happy because then now they're making fun of her in a very funny way, as opposed to having her on and her making fun of herself.
I will say the original cast, when they had Ford on, they did something actually subversive. That
yeah, they
would be
purposely
the one time that they were actually really subversive.
Well, that was probably the only
and
era
I think it
of
might
SNL
have been,
that was subversive. Was,
yeah.
was the first.
Yeah, that's like first season.
Yeah, that was when, in fact, he didn't get thrown off the air, but one of the reasons, and this was in the Tom Shales oral history, is one of the reasons, like, they just completely wiped the slate clean after the first five seasons and brought in an all-new producer, all-new writers. Everything was because I think Lorne Michaels wanted Al Franken and Franken and Davis to run the show after he left, and they wanted to do it, but Al Franken did a whole weekend update bit about what a jerk Fred Silverman
right.
is. That's
limo
the kind of thing
the
they would never, they would never do that now, and like they kind of targets I would like to see them go after, like, you know, David Gregory and, like, Meet the Press and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And all of the, like, Brian Williams. And that annoys me, too, is that
they had
when Brian Williams
yeah.
goes on all these shows, The Daily Show and SNL, and purposely portrays himself as a good sport who's really funny, who's cool.
Yeah.
And Brian Williams, you know, is to me, like, is one of the most insipid journalists on television. They should be going after him rather than having him come on and
celebrating
and joking around.
But also that's part of the problem with NBC. They're you know, he goes on 30 Rock and he goes
yeah.
on Fallon and they all go on SNL. They're all so incestuous with each other there. You know, Lorne Michaels practically owns the fucking network.
Yeah.
You know, on look at the new Thursday night lineup. Three of those four sitcoms star SNL alums.
Right.
And Lorne Michaels is making a fucking shitload of money off of Thursday night NBC. That's crazy.
And
I mean, he's making money off of not just producing 30 Rock, but off of Tina Fey's contract, Tracy Morgan's contract. He's making money off of Up All Night, the entire sitcom itself. Maya Rudolph's contract.
She does piano lessons.
Amy Poehler's contract.
Molly Shannon looks like. He's going to have a recurring on that now.
Molly Shannon will come on.
Wait, how does someone like Maya Rudolph have it? Is be holding to him still? What would
The deal was when Adam Sandler became so popular, Lorne Michaels basically said, "Okay, from now on, anyone who signs on SNL, they have to give me X amount of their earnings for the next 20 years."
No,
that's part of the contract. Yeah, it's a deal.
That's a lot. That just doesn't even seem legal.
It seems like they don't.
It doesn't. But you have the choice to sign it or not.
In old movies, when it would be Ingrid Bergman in the credits, Ingrid Bergman appears through the courtesy of David O. Selznick.
Right.
You see that credit
because he owned
it. And that was a thing. But I thought they stopped that. That was a thing. Personal contracts where you would. You know, if you were like a young actress, like you would be signed to a personal contract to Howard Hawks or to David
right.
O. Selznick. And then if you did a movie for someone besides them, you would have to get permission and that person would get a cut of your money. And in the case of Selznick, there would always be that credit for like Jennifer Jones
mm-hmm.
and Ingrid Bergman, all the people he had under personal contract. You see that in movies to this day.
Like
The Bells of St. Mary. Ingrid Bergman appears through the courtesy of David O. Selznick right at the top of the movie.
It's a production and a management thing. You know, Broadway Video has a management firm, whatever. So they basically manage these people. And it's good for them, too, because look at, you know, the old days when you were on SNL, you made one movie a year in the summer when you weren't on. Look at Jason Sudeikis. That guy's fucking in three movies a year because Lauren says, yes, by all means, go make a movie because I'm going to get a giant chunk of it. Yeah. So, I mean, it's good for everybody. The bottom line is when he saw Adam Sandler getting so popular, he said to himself, he would not be who he is if it wasn't for me. I am owed some of that money. I'm not going to make that mistake.
But it strikes me as very...
Oh, he's going to hell for it.
Yeah,
without a doubt.
He already has millions of dollars. He should just let them go off and let SNL be a springboard and then let them go off and be as
like
successful.
Like he did in the old days.
Successful as they want.
And enjoy being, you know, the hippie father. Obviously, that's what happens when you get older. You're no longer, you know, as gregarious or friendly with your money. So I want to close this final thing about hipsters and tweeting and going to see things you hate so you can talk shit
about
it.
Gallagher thing really quick. My favorite thing almost makes me want to go see Gallagher, but later when it gets even worse is I loved the fact that, as you describe it, it just took so goddamn long to get to the watermelon. Like, I find that funny.
Yeah. Really? It was 3 hours?
That was the amazing
thing.
Just
funny that,
he was alienating his own crowd.
He doesn't
want
to do it.
Right.
He was walking people that came in ponchos. It was not matching ponchos.
Oh, the
ponchos.
Show was literally 3 hours?
The show, 10:30 to 1:30.
That's too long.
The Sledge of Magic did not come out until 1:20. People were just leaving in droves. People who came in ponchos, excited to get smashed. So there's that. That's kind of like a fuck you to his audience.
And was also, and did, was he? I thought I read that he was yelling at people who were leaving at one point.
No. He tried to get a girl kicked out who was just drunk. The people were really drunk there too. People were, but like it was that, and then the racism.
His own gig was a hell kick.
But if it wasn't for that, trying the audience's patience and the racism, it's like just like in Maron's interview. Like there was so much I wanted to hear. It was the start of a good interview. Then Maron got really combative. And Gallagher wouldn't back down on racist stuff. And he's like, I'm allowed to say... And it's like, if you just wouldn't do that stuff, like, it wouldn't
be... And did
he
do a lot of homophobic stuff when you saw him, too?
Yeah, I wrote down a bunch. I mean, you can look at the Twitter... You can look at my Twitter feed and find...
Tell people where they can find that.
You can just find at Andy T. Wood and just...
But didn't somebody also, like, compile them?
Somebody compiled them. Actually, if you go to andytwood.tumblr.com, you can see a few posts in. I link directly to the whole transcript of the whole... things.
So you can see all the stuff that
says
and what
things
April says.
About you talk about politics. He said, you know, I miss Sarah Palin. There's something sexy about a dumb bitch. Like, that's the whole joke.
Right.
And how am I going to get on your side if you
that
say
is,
something
that's
like
reprehensible.
That?
That's, I mean, yeah, and you can't, even if you agree with that or some portion of that statement.
Which part?
Which part, yeah.
There's no wit. And that reminds me of like all of when I was doing comedy in the Midwest, all of the hack. Like one-nighter comics that I work with, they would do stuff like that all the time. Like,
you know, it reminds
people
me of honestly,
their feet.
Like talking about calling women like fat, ugly bitches and stuff, and getting huge laughs from the audience. You know, and that you know, when I hear that, I mean, when I just think of Gallagher as okay, he does the watermelon thing. I'm not into it. Whatever. You know, I'm indifferent. But when I hear that he does that kind of stuff, then I'm like, you know what? Go to a show. Tweet the hell out of it and talk about how horrible it is.
That's
a good thing.
It makes me really sad every time I hear a Gallagher story, because I think we've talked about this before. I was a kid when Gallagher's was at the height of his popularity, and I remember watching his specials on TV, and he was so much about whimsy and having like a childlike sense of wonder about the world. I mean, he was a really positive guy, and now he's just this angry racist old man.
Yeah.
And it's like, what happened? How did the Gallagher from the early 80s become this guy?
Yeah, plus put your shirt on.
Is it because Jeff Dunham has been so successful with racist comedy that he's like,
but see, it's the puppet who's racist, not Jeff.
Here's what I was. Here's one thing I would point out that I think happened. I mentioned this before that not that long ago I got a chance to do a show with Emo Phillips. And then Emo Phillips saw me do comedy, and he's a friend, and talked to me, and was like, oh, you're so funny. Emo Phillips, there was a time when he was huge. He was a huge hit. But he got kind of locked into the character he does, because that'll happen when you have a recognizable persona as a stand-up. Right. It's a tricky road to walk. But guess what? He still does stand-up joyfully. He still writes
some of the
joyfully,
best jokes ever.
Wonderful jokes.
Brilliant joke.
And he does it happily because he enjoys the craft, and he didn't let the fact that he isn't the huge cultural thing he was before now affect his self-esteem.
Right. That's
Gallagher
exactly right.
has been crushed by the thought of what he used to be and what he is now. Mm. Carrot Top, who people ridicule, Carrot Top's an even better example because people ridicule Carrot Top for the props and stuff. Anybody who ever meets Carrot Top, I never hear, boy, that Carrot Top was a dick.
He once told me I was funny. I couldn't believe it.
All I ever hear is, yeah, all I ever hear is that whatever you think of him as a guy,
you
can make fun of him all you want. He's perfectly happy.
And I'll tell you, I would kill to have Carrot Top's life.
And his body. Come on.
to live in Vegas and do the shows he does in Vegas.
And
have that,
get to work out 6 hours a day.
Have that cushy
gig.
Life. I would fucking kill for that. That seems to me like it's
retirement. He probably has
retirement.
A hair spotter, right?
I just did a week
out.
In...
Idiot.
Probably has a hair spotter.
Oh, wait. Here's a trivia question. Do you guys know Carrot Top's real name?
I do. It's Joseph Karinsky. No,
isn't it Steve? No, it's not Steve. Damn it.
This is going to be the trivia
Chris.
Question.
His first name is Chris, right?
No, it's not.
Damn it.
Tom?
Tomato Tom.
Jim?
Pip Pop.
Okay. Kevin. That's the trivia question for this week. If you know Carrot Top's real name.
Oh, wait, I got it.
Scott.
Scott what?
Scott something Armstrong?
Nope. Okay, you got half of it.
Scott Tom. Floss.
That's the trivia question this week. What's Carrot Top's real name?
I
Andy got half.
Say that I
Here, I'll give you half a sticker, Andy.
I just did a week with Emo Phillips as well in Minneapolis.
Hilarious, right?
Yeah, everything you said about him is really true.
Also, he nailed Judy Tenuta. You got to give it up for that, right?
And the whole time she was playing the accordion. The whole time.
That
doesn't
is
stop.
Sexy.
She's nice, too. She's a little loony.
Yeah, she is very nice.
Yes. Although, I told the story. I'll tell it really fast. I was in a movie with her. And it was very nice. And then, like
he had actual scenes when it was
just
like the two of them.
Yeah, like three solid scenes.
So it wasn't like he was just
and, like, months later, I saw her again. I was like, Judy, it's so nice to see you. And she was like, oh, it's great to see you. And then at some point, she was like, you directed the movie, right? And the guys who directed it, they wrote it together in her house.
It was like, Greg Liana. And didn't she also ask you to get her some water once on Style Court?
Yeah, I did, though. She wasn't being mean. She just didn't know who the hell I was. I was like, okay, well, I'll get you some water.
That's very nice.
No, she was great. And also, in her defense, she's a stand-up comic her whole life, and somebody made her get up at 7 a.m.
Not cool.
Get up at 7 a.m.
Not cool, Cunningham. All right, let's talk about, I guess briefly, about this Elizabeth Hasselbeck thing. Now, she was on, of course she was on The View, but Bill Maher was on, and she basically took him to task for telling this joke about her. And what I hate is that she says to him, now, it's not personal, I can take a joke, but come on, Bill, that's just not very funny. And my first thought is, why is it that joke that you point out that's not very funny, the joke about you? This guy tells 100 jokes a day, and that's the one joke you pick out as not being funny? And more importantly, who the fuck are you?
Comedy
that's,
police.
You're the comedy police. That's not even your job. Your job is to talk about, be political. That's your job on The View, to be the other voice of, the voice of whatever the opposite of reason is. That's your that's your job, to be the opposite of reason. Not to have people on and go, I just didn't think that was funny. And she even says, I wasn't offended. It's just not funny. Well, boo fucking who?
Yeah, offended by it.
I hear a million things that aren't funny all day. Guess what? That's
for
comedy.
Someone like her, the way to deal with that is, you know, she's got a considerable amount of money, is when you hear Bill Maher or whoever doing a joke about you, hire some comedy writers, hire some comedians.
And do jokes about him.
You write some jokes about Bill Maher, pick
Fuck
the funniest
yes.
one. Go on The View the next morning and say, yeah, Bill Maher said this about me, but Bill Maher, I guess he, you know, wasn't with his whores or, you know, or whatever.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I guess he wouldn't say that about me if I was black. And everyone
right.
goes, ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly
you know,
what
like,
you fucking
just come,
do.
Come back, but she's capable of hiring someone to write a good joke for her.
She could ask Whoopi Goldberg for a good joke. I mean, say what you
want
to Whoopi Goldberg.
Whoopi Goldberg maybe knows someone funny.
I was going to say that it would be weird hearing Hasselbeck go, and I'm like, Bill Maher, child.
But it blows me away that, well, first of all, to have him on the show and then do that. And then you know, there are two supposedly stand-up comics on that show. Well, I guess three if you count Sherry. They've all done stand-up comedy. None of them rush to his defense. None of them go, shut up.
Well, they have to go the next day and be with his Elizabeth Hasselbeck again or whatever.
Really? But yeah. I don't know.
Maybe they have to work with every day, not Bill Maher.
What did they say about her? What did he say about her?
The joke was about some journalists getting released from Libya, I guess. And he said, now that they're released, we have to send Elizabeth Hasselbeck over there.
Oh.
And it wasn't even...
not a great joke.
It's not a great joke, and but it also doesn't say anything bad about her, just that, hey, get rid of her. He could have said it about Katie Couric or anybody else. But she clearly... What I hate is the disingenuousness.
Disingenuity?
Of her saying, I'm not offended by it. I just didn't think it was a funny joke because it's just a coincidence that the joke's about right. You. Is that what you're trying to make us believe? And she's so full of shit. And then he goes, but then to make things worse, he goes on Letterman the next night and says, oh, but it's all in good fun. You know, we have fun when we're on there. We're like a brother and sister who argue. And he totally backed off from it, which I thought is completely counterproductive, or is the antithesis of what Bill Maher claims to be. He talks shit about people all the time, but then when it comes to like,
well, I don't think that's the opposite of who he claims to be, because first, he still did talk shit about her on Letterman, and he has always walked a fine line of being, he's a modern insult comic, because he always does the thing, he does what all insult comics do, and
I kid,
and I'm fine with that. If you want
to, honestly, he doesn't have anything to gain by picking an actual fight with her.
But the position he is in, he is in a very unique position that many comics are not in, that he can tell people, especially, you know, young people who are still forming opinions about America and about the political system, he can say, by the way, she's a horrible person. If you guys watch The View and think she's good, she's nuts. I'm not kidding. And he can take the time to do that.
He's probably done that on his show. I mean, I think, you know.
Well, like, he defends Ann Coulter on his show all the time.
What?
Yeah, and I remember once Belzer was on, and they were talking about it, and Belzer kind of went off. And he was like, she should die. I hope she gets cancer. And Bill was like, come on, she's a friend of mine. You can't say that just because you don't agree with her. And Belzer goes, forget it. She's a political party doll without a brain in her head. And he wasn't going to let up because he knew, I have a responsibility to do this. Whereas Bill said, well, she's a friend of mine, and we don't agree on things, but... And that's why he has her on the show all the time.
I'm not
exactly.
How can you be friends with Ann Coulter?
That's my, yeah.
Not even from a partisan angle, just like you listen to her talk, and she's just a caricature. She's like...
Because you, she's by being character. By being her friend, you have to like say, well, she what she does is just who she is. She's not doing, because she's,
well,
what she does is malicious. I can't be friends with somebody who do malicious things.
Well, the
like
thing
that.
Is when people have, and I mean, what really gets me is like when shows like the Today Show or whatever have, you know, Ann Coulter will publish a new book,
right?
And they'll have her on, and she'll have some outrageous thing, and they'll know she's going to say it. And like Matt Lauer interview her, and then his whole attitude is like, well, whatever you think of Ann Coulter, you know, you got to agree she's pretty provocative.
Right.
And it's just, they're lowering their standards so much because her books don't even have, they don't even have facts in them. You
no.
know? Mm-hmm. And it seems to me that if you're going to be an author and get to go on TV shows and promote your book, Your book should have a basic level of accuracy and quality.
Well,
and
obviously,
besides her opinions on everything, like, I don't care about her outrageous opinions because she's just trying to get attention, and I don't take any of that seriously. But I wish the media wouldn't treat her as someone who is just makes these outrageous remarks. But come on, you got to have her on. You got to respect her. It's a different
right.
point of view. No,
That's
it's not that it's a different point of view. It's a lower standard of if you're going to have a conservative on your show, have someone who wrote a book where he or she researched the book and the facts that are in, that are
yes.
presented as facts can be substantiated as facts, which you can't say about anything in Ann Coulter's books.
And when they're not, when she does that bullshit, it's responsibility. Somebody has to take responsibility to call her on that and
yeah.
say, no, you're wrong. And it's sad to me that the only person on TV who does that is Jon Stewart.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and she won't go on his show.
Right, because
yeah.
she knows, and he's always polite. He's always... he bends over backwards to make the guests feel welcome, but he always says, what about this? How can you say
right.
this, and how can you prove this? And he lets them get their point out, you know, he doesn't talk over them. But I'm like, how is it that the fucking guy from Death to Smoochie is the big investigative journalist on TV.
Yeah.
You know, it
doesn't say because he, you know, Stewart doesn't want people to consider his show a real news show. He says over and over again, we're a parody, we're a comedy. Don't
the fake
take
news.
Us seriously. But the only reason that you can't help but take it seriously is just because the real news shows are so bad.
And they're so full of
shit. That his show, by comparison, asks much tougher questions than Matt Lauer or David Gregory or any of these people.
It's the ultimate irony of comedy because, you know, comedy has to have a basis in truth, otherwise it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. You can't set up a false premise in your joke and expect people to laugh at it. What they do on the fucking Daily Show, they know we cannot make up fake news and then make jokes about it. We have to tell the actual truth.
Right,
so they go way out of their way to tell you this is exactly what happened. We're not coloring it at all, mm-hmm. and now we're going to make fun of it. And I mean, that's where I get my news, you know, from the fucking Daily Show, because I know at least the setups are going to be free of opinion. You know what I mean? And that's maybe the fucking regular news people should do that. Give the news and then make a joke about it, and that way they won't have to give their fucking...
Well, they're...
I mean, that's... Fox News is just a joke now. The fucking idiot, not Steve Doocy, but the black-haired guy who's not Steve Doocy on that
Ryan
Fox and Friends...
Steve Doocy? Are you thinking of Steve Doocy?
He's talking about Justin Bieber the other day. And he goes, Justin Bieber getting sued for a paternity? Jeez, he's 11! The 17-year-old... Oh, I guess he's 17. Like, he has to... He thinks he's so clever, he has to put in his wacky commentary, and the very next line that he has yet to read ahead to is he's 17. That's how fucking out of touch they are with their own show.
A little investigative journalism. You find out how old he is.
Yeah, or maybe you read the next line in the teleprompter.
That's what I mean. That's what I mean.
By investigative journalism.
Here's what I'll say about Hasselback, because this is the one thing I'd like to say, is it's annoying that people go on that show and get sandbagged. That's Rosie O'Donnell's fault.
Yeah.
It is. Now that show, which it doesn't make sense that like 60 Minutes is where you get sandbagged, right? That's where that should happen.
Or New Orleans.
Or New Orleans,
That's where you get sandbagged.
Yeah, but like now...
Or teabag.
Yeah.
Where do you get teabagged, Jim?
Well, there's a bathroom I like to go to.
Would you go back to watching The View if Rosie O'Donnell came back to it?
No.
I am not capable of going back to watching The View.
Well, Jim used to be a huge fan. Are you saying because of Sherry? You wouldn't watch it?
No, I'm just over it. I used to find it kind of entertaining to watch, and just the way that things can be.
I've never been a fan of The View, but I will say this, and this is like kind of comes to your point about like how news shows don't do their job. I remember that one of the most times during the 08 election when John McCain was most put on the spot was when he was on The View. I don't remember the specifics of it, but he went on and they were very tough with him about something or other.
I guess that's why guys like Newt Gingrich and Rick Perry won't go on The View,
because
they know they're going to be tough on him.
Letterman took him to test.
Letterman is tougher than a lot of journalists on people. He's like charming and nice.
And
he,
I think
he asks tough questions that you don't
even when want. They're not there, you know, he used to love having Trump on the show. And I remember Trump used to say, you know, he used to go on, he'd say, well, and I remember Dave said, now, The Apprentice sits on NBC, right? And Trump would be like, yeah, but you know, they don't want me to come on and promote the show on CBS, but I like you and I love coming here, so I'm going to come on. And I always thought he was a great guest. But then Dave, you know, had to say, I think he's a racist now with his birth certificate. And Trump shut him down and said, I'm not going to show up anymore. And I think, you know, not that Letterman needs to please anybody anymore, mm-hmm. but that's a big deal to, you know, he'll never have Trump on again, you know, and that, I think that's a huge deal. Just say the shit he says. And when Bill O'Reilly's on, it's great because they go back and forth, but O'Reilly's enough of a showman to keep up and do the right thing, even though that's why I love when he's on Jon Stewart too. Oh fuck, those guys are hilarious together. Could you imagine that being a show, like to go see live, see them talk and give their dumbass opinions? God, that'd be great. All right, any other topics? We're at the hour and a half mark here. Jim, do you got anything stupid you want to say?
Oh, I will say this. So last week I mentioned that I got this thing on my car that said, from this guy, Mike.
Oh, right.
Said, if you want to sell your car, give me a call.
Oh, wait, it was from Mike?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I got it.
If you want to sell your car, I'd be interested in buying it. So I got this note. And I'm kind of a gearhead. I have a Toyota Corolla.
I had one of those.
Yeah.
So you probably got those notes all the time.
Yeah.
Not like
now, I got the blue one. So that might be what it was. So I thought, that's just weird that Mike put this note on my car. Well, a week later, I got another note on my car from Mike again. And I
read, hey, haven't heard from you lately. Yeah.
Well, here was the funny thing. I was like, ah, it's a... I realized, oh, it looks like handwriting. It's a flyer.
Oh!
It's one of those folia things.
Oh,
it's,
that's
it's
great.
It's one of those deals. My wife, many years ago, got this thing in the mail that said, Dear Mary. And at the time, my wife was overweight. And I've been really worried about your health. You should go to this place and look at, like... Mm-hmm. And it wasn't from any friend at all. And I fucking tracked those people down and had a talking to, because I don't think you send those to people.
That's cool. Wow. Dear Mary.
Yeah.
His wife's name is Mary Jo. That's how he knew it wasn't a real thing.
But anyway, well,
what's the scam? Is there a scam, or is it just a cheap way to make it seem personal?
Yeah, I think it's because I think Mike, and by the way, I called him up. I said, and it's just somebody's cell phone number. Hey, this is Mike. Leave me a message. So the scam is you think you're talking to just a person.
Right.
So then what he's going to try to do is get your car from you cheap, because
he's
putting it on a bunch of different cars, hoping that you're in financial straits. And he's like, going to give you $1,000 cash. And then you get rid of your car, you have $1,000, and he makes
And then he sells it to CarMax for $3,000.
Right, exactly.
Or he auctions it off is what he does.
But the real deception is there is no he. It's a company that does this at a large scale.
Right, exactly. So I called Mike, and I called him up, and I was like, hey, man, apparently you're really interested in my car. So just so you know, I'm not selling my car.
April got one of those. I got to look and see if it was clearly not actually was it intentionally awful looking handwriting?
It's going
to make it seem.
Yeah, it won't be clear unless you have the side by side. It's not obvious because it doesn't automatically look to me like a photocopy. It's good quality as far as the way they fool you.
Right. Wow. But it's awful handwriting. Right?
Yeah.
It looks like a person who can't write very well or not.
Well, better handwriting than I have. So I don't know.
I'll tell you, I've had.
With your handwriting.
I've had a dent in my car for like 10 years that I've never fixed. And it's a great way to meet people, because people are always coming up to me in parking lots or even just driving by. Hey, I could fix that dent for you. You know, like I'm always getting solicited by people who can fix the dent.
I've heard that's awesome. No, you know what? I don't need the dent fixed, but let's get some coffee.
Yes, exactly.
I've heard that's one of the worst things.
We're making this personal human collection.
That's one of the worst things you can do is let those guys work on your car, because it's not just that they're bad workmen. It is a full on scam, because they'll fix it, but then they'll do something else wrong.
Right.
They'll go, well, yeah, I can fix that too, but that's another $500.
Many years ago in Chicago, I dinged up my truck pretty bad, and some guys made that offer to me for $50, and they did it right there and then. And actually, what they did was correct. They just don't finish the job because they don't have the wherewithal.
They leave the holes that
they drilled holes
to
and popped it out. And I was like, got to drive home and go, hey, by the way, remember how I dented up our car, honey? Well, now I got three holes in it. How's that?
Now it looks like I was fleeing the scene of a crime.
Then the guy said he could fix the holes, and he drove in these oversized corks, and now the engine came out. And
now, another guy said he could pull the corks out, but he had to kick me in the nuts to do it. So I can't have kids now.
Nah. I want someone who sees me driving around in a state of depression to say, hey, I can get you soul off.
Or just, hey, I can cheer you up.
Yeah, right,
you want me
right.
to fix that for you? That'd be nice.
Some guy's
give me good news.
He's got a flatbed truck, and on the back of it, there's a couch.
Yeah,
like, come on up here. Come on up. Why don't you just talk?
Yes, by all means. Now, you were going to say something about, we were talking earlier about the stand-up show and how people live tweet the stand-up comedy.
Oh, yeah. This guy, Brian Farrell, who's very funny. He's a very peculiar comic. Sometimes it's weird because the first like 10 times I saw this guy, I was like, I don't know if he has any jokes. Because what he would use this particular open mic for that I was going to see him at was to bitch about being a waiter. But they were great stories. And then I realized, oh, he's got plenty of jokes. When he's here, that's what he's doing at this coffee shop. And who cares? No one's paying to get in.
And I know Brandy Posey does that at her open mic or her show. Or just like the open mic joke of the night.
What she'll do is she'll write something open mic genius.
Right.
And she'll just quote something like, man, I took a big old shit. And it'll be like when somebody tells that like iconic comic where you're like, oh, okay, they're going to talk about shitting.
And classic. going to the classics.
Yeah. Now, I've told this before, but not on this show, so this is sort of new. It was one time I went and saw this comedian at an open mic, and he was doing an act out, or we'll call it an acty out. That's what we call it, an acty out. And what he was doing is, he says, ever been in a public restroom, and you're taking a giant dump, and you got your hands up against the wall, because you're like, whoa, and he does this long thing about taking a giant dump, and he finishes the thing, but this is the thing that made me laugh hysterically. He gets very thoughtful after the joke is done, and he goes, what else did I want to share with you? Yeah, because you bore your soul.
He really opened up with that shitting. Really opened up with that shitting chunk.
I love getting advice from stand-ups who do stuff like that too. Like, I opened for a comic who goes to that well also, then afterwards he's telling me about how you gotta be writing every night, you gotta be spending 3 hours a night writing, because everyone else out there is doing that. If you want to keep up, I'm like, is that where you got the chunk about shitting your pants? Like, that, you know, just wood shedding that.
It wasn't until third draft he went, my pants. It's in my pants. That's where it happens.
In my pants.
I've got to make it more personal. It's in my pants. It's not in his pants. It's about me.
Nice. All right. Well, Frank got to do one of his classic jokes. We'll make this a new tradition, Andy. You want to tell people the pitch line for that new movie you had about a boy who was raised by bears?
Oh my god, I forgot which one that was. Oh no, oh yeah, that's right. Right. His forebears are four bears.
There you go.
He's raised by bear grandparents.
Grandparents, and that's how they sell the movie. His forebears are four bears. I tell you, if you go to a movie these days and you see the poster for Coriolanus, do what I do and stand in front of it strategically. So only the anus part shows from behind your back. Or put your arm up on it and just see how many people do a double take as you walk by.
What's Coriolanus again?
It's a Shakespearean tragedy, I think, historical tragedy. But it stars Gerard Butler. Isn't that weird?
Oh, wow.
Coriolanus with Gerard Butler. Who else is in that movie? Assie McGee? But or if you have kids, stand there until they get mad at you. That's the other good thing, is do that with your arm, and so it just says anus until they get mad at you and say, let's leave, please. All right, anything else? Jim?
No, I got no other stories.
Tom? No, well, we mentioned it in passing, but the good news out of television this week was that we're apparently very close to having a deal for more Arrested Development. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, we'll talk about it when it starts.
Apparently close to making a deal.
But from what I understand is basically it's all part of the movie. These will be like a miniseries that focus on each individual character that catch you up to what they have been doing.
As far as I know, there's
a way to lead into the movie.
I think that's the plan, but I don't think there's a deal for the movie yet. So,
but I think it's cool that it's on Netflix.
The deal for the episodes will probably help make the deal for the movie.
Right, because people see that they want.
There are details out there, by the way, about possible Ghostbusters script. That make it seem likely, and a lot of people responded like they didn't like the details. I fucking love them.
That Bill Murray's dead.
Well, that's older
news. Bill Murray won't be in it, right?
I heard he was going to be a ghost. He'll be in it a little bit. He'll be.
What I read somewhere, and I haven't in a while, is that they couldn't even get in touch with Bill Murray. They were trying to get him.
Well, he's notoriously hard to get in touch with, anyways. So,
but like Aykroyd's character apparently has one eye. Something's happened.
I'm down with that.
Yeah, I am too. But there were people who were like, I don't want to see that. And like,
I would make the case that there really isn't a need for another Ghostbusters movie.
Well, was there a need for the second one?
No, and it wasn't very good, was it?
No. But why?
I like the second one.
I say a need is, need schmied. Well, you have a movie, and sometimes it'll be great.
You have a need, what's that for?
Speed. That's true, but that's not going to be the case with the Ghostbusters movie.
Okay.
It's not going to be great.
Mark those words, listeners. Uh-huh. Frank Conniff says the new Ghostbusters movie, if it ever gets made, will be a complete waste of time. Once it comes out, we will have you back on the show to either laud you for your prescient thoughts or to...
It's not a prescient thought. It's, right. I could be wrong. But it, I think what I'm basically just expressing is basic common sense.
I will say this. I do think that the movie will have a target on its back. Much like,
well, sure.
Much like the Star Wars prequels, much like the last Indiana Jones, people will be waiting for it to
oh,
be
Oh, God, I hated that last Indiana Jones.
I did, too. They loved it.
But
it
did, I didn't love it. I didn't
that
hate
was a
okay.
movie, too, when, that, when that fourth Indiana Jones movie came out.
Yeah. I mean, the more I think about it, the less I like it, but I enjoyed it when I saw
when,
it.
When that came out, I decided I threw all my cynicism away. I was like, I can't wait for the new Indiana Jones. I was like, you guys with the Ghostbusters movie.
Really?
I was like, I'm just going to go and I'm going to, my heart is going to be open to it. And I went to it.
You
and
felt
it,
like
it was,
you got
I
raped.
Thought it was just so, yeah, it was so horrible. I felt.
To make things worse, we saw it in Beverly Hills and this kid behind us wouldn't stop talking. And when I shushed him, he shushed me back. And I was like, and I looked at his mom as if to say, are you going to do anything? And she just stared at me. And I wanted, and I was like, so if I just smack your kid in the mouth, you're not going to do anything about that either, are you? I was very close to causing a scene that day.
And that was a better action sequence than anything in the movie.
And the monkeys and the Jeep, yeah. Wait, I just realized something. The
really
Ghostbusters
bad.
Sequel, has there been this big of a gap for anything that's comedy? Because it's always action movies that they go back to.
Right,
every
Die
time.
Hard.
A 20 year, has there been a 20-year break between action or comedy installments? I don't know, maybe
Lord.
It's easier to bring back a comedy franchise. Maybe it's harder. I have no idea. But
that's a good question. Listeners, let us know if you... If you can think of anything, well, what about Animal House 2?
Well, that's never been made. Though.
Oh, okay. Stripes, more Stripes. Did they
back See, I don't. Yeah, like I said, I don't think that. I think that you know, I would rather see someone, whatever the Ghostbusters for this generation is. I'd rather see someone create a new characters and a new story.
Return to
sure.
Club Paradise. That's what it was. Return to Club Paradise. Robin Williams' son shows up and starts the hotel again.
But it's almost but a new Club
it's
Paradise
a violation of the original because it's
a
good.
New Club Paradise movie though. How is that much different than making a new Tron? That's what I would ask because Tron
yeah.
was not a success when it came out, and yet they made a sequel to it. Like
and it still
later.
Wasn't that much of a success.
Right. So it's like,
much
where's the logic? I don't understand the logic to all this. And
well,
also, like, it's also from a marketing standpoint, like, the audience that movie studios covet in this day and age, I don't think give a shit about Ghostbusters. You know, that's like, that's for
well,
people our age.
Who are they going to call? if they don't give a shit about Ghostbusters,
and plus, is there a Ray Parker III
who can rip off
Huey Lewis Jr. in the Junior News? Oh fuck! On fire. The Junior News.
It's like Ranger Rick highlights.
That's right. Or Nick Junior News with Linda Ellerbe. All right. Before we go.
Remember that album, Kickball? Right?
No.
It's the Junior News album.
Oh, Kickball.
Oh, sports.
I love the fact that there was a new Bad Lieutenant movie a couple.
Yeah, Port of Orleans or whatever it was called.
That someone just decided, hey, that's a franchise.
Right. There's
got
to be other
movies.
Bad Lieutenants who have
yeah,
stories
yeah.
to tell. He can't be the worst lieutenant
yeah.
in the world. All right, Frank, tell people what you got going on if they want to check you out.
Well, if they want to hear me on the radio and on the internet, they can. Every week I'm on the Jimmy Dore Show, and I'm also on the David Feldman Show, which are both on KPFK 90.7, and also you can hear on the various websites. And you can also check out upcoming Cinematic Titanic shows, which is the live Mystery Science Theater show that we do. Our next one is in Philadelphia on New Year's Eve, and we've got a bunch coming up in the next year, so go to cinematictitanic.com for all that info. And also, my show Cartoon Dump will be a week from tomorrow at the Steve Allen Theater with Special guest stars Jay London, Wayne Fetterman, and Chris Hardwick.
Wow.
Rass.
What a star-studded lineup.
Damn.
And Andy, what's going on with you?
You can find me on Twitter and Tumblr at Andy T. Wood. And more importantly, keep an eye out for Jason Nash's Married Season 2, which is coming out on ComedyCentral.com soon. That's what I spent my summer helping him produce, and I'm in an episode briefly, but it's really funny. We did 11 10-minute episodes. It's got T.J. Miller, Andy Richter, Paul F. Tompkins, Andrea Savage, wow. Jerry Minor, yeah, tons of people. At least 15, 20 names like that. They're all really funny. So all right. Keep an eye out. Jason Nash is married. You can find the trailer if you just Google that right now.
Oh, and speaking of that, you know, I always said that for prizes I have given out, you know, Comedy Central sends me DVDs of stuff they have. I had the Weird Al concert that I sent to some guy, and I got that documentary about South Park. They just sent me a new one. It's Carlos Mencia's latest stand-up special. So, trivia buffs, you can take that home as one of your prizes. Or
that's
I can just...
the second prize. The first prize is not getting
it. Yeah, the first prize is nothing. Nothing at all.
It would be fun to die when we dissect it, and all the trivia questions will be, whose joke is this?
Right? Yeah, why put down Gallagher when Carlos Mencia is around?
That's true. Get Carlos Mencia on there and talk shit about him. All right, Jim, you want to do this mashup and we'll get out of here?
By Odin's eye, brother, I will not allow you to take control of Asgard. I will stop you. I don't know how you're going to do that when I got the power of the funky Cole Medina. You know what I'm saying?
Idiot. Yeah. You are an idiot. You are the worst.
Yeah, but at least it's a terrible impression.
It turned out, and by the way, it turned out that Helga was a dude.
Idiot.
Could I go for this one?
Yeah, I don't think Frank has.
I'm at a complete loss.
Yeah, I had a feeling. Andy?
Tone Loki?
That's exactly what it is. Tone Loki. Loki and Tone Loki together.
What was those two things from?
It was Thor, and he was Thor talking to his brother Loki. You
from
got the Loki
movie Thor?
Or for the comic book, or okay. The Norse legends.
I actually was on an airplane. I was on Virgin Airlines where I had a bunch of movies I could watch, and I could have watched Thor, but I went with my other choice, which was nothing.
Because luckily you'd been pulled over on the way to the airport.
But then the other thing, he was doing an impression of Tone Loke from
Tone Loke.
The Funky Cole Medina guy.
Okay.
So you put them together, and it's a match made in heaven. Wow, Tone Loke.
Tone Loke, wherever he is thrilled that he's being talked about.
Let's do it. Okay, that is the show. Thank you very much. You know, appreciate all the new downloads we've gotten at Stitcher, and I want to thank everybody for listening to the show. And Frank, appreciate you coming. And Andy, I really appreciate you coming and talking to us about this thing. And you know, it contrary to what people may think about me or my standing in Hollywood or the comedy business, while I am very opinionated, I wish that people would do what Andy did and come and give their side or just argue for or against what happened. Because yes, I'm going to talk a lot of shit about something that has or has not been done. But at the very least, you know, if you think I'm talking shit, come and you know, shout me down because it's not that hard to do. I'm a very cowardly man. All right. That is the show. Thank you so much for listening, and go fuck yourself.